this month, not just 18-year-olds will be going back to school. The non-traditional college student is becoming more and more the norm. Close to 45% of post-secondary students do not enroll right after high school, and many attend part-time. The new student can be a single parent, a veteran, newly unemployed, or someone in a dead-end job looking to reinvent themselves. They work, they raise families, they often struggle to keep a roof over their heads. The new book, Back to School, Why Everyone Deserves a Second Chance at Education, is a look at the schools serving the growing population of second chancers and explores what higher education, including community colleges and occupational centers, and the non-traditional students who attend them, offer our rapidly changing society. Mike Rose has been named by Education Week as one of the 25 most influential educators in the United States. He's the author of the new book, and it's a pleasure to welcome him to the program this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Joe. I appreciate the opportunity.
Very nice to have you with us. What brought you to the subject of wanting to look at those who deserve a second chance and are taking that second chance?
Well, I've been interested in, you know, these folks for a very long time. I myself am the first person in my family to go to college. I come from very humble means, and so this has a place close to my heart. If you think about where most of the attention goes when we talk about higher education, it tends to go toward the elite schools, the, you know, the top 50 in the U.S. News and World Report surveys. But that's really not where all the work gets done in higher education in the United States. Something like 85% of undergrads are at state colleges, local campuses, community colleges, as you mentioned. And I wanted to tell their story because it seems to me that the future of our country really depends on the kind of work they do and the kind of job we do for them.
The pressure that we put on young people to go to college, is that a fair pressure? And the other way of asking the question is, given the topic of your book, should we also be putting pressure on older potential students to look into that second chance of education?
Right. Well, there's a couple pieces I want to respond to there. Well, one is, an interesting thing has happened in this country over the last few generations, and that is that we have, as a nation, we have worked very hard to try and convince more and more people that some kind of higher education is for them. And that's been quite an undertaking, and I think has been successful. People who a generation or two ago would have not even thought about going beyond high school now see it as a possibility. So that's one piece of the picture here. But the other question you raise is a really important one, and that is, what kinds of societal pressures does that new opening put on people? And I think sometimes we express the choice that faces them in the wrong way. The choice we tend to express is, well, either people go right into the workforce after high school, or they need to go get a four-year degree. And the way I'd rather think about it, Joe, is what are the multiple kinds of opportunities we could be providing for people to get further education? The occupational certificate that would enable them to go into the construction trades or some kind of specialized manufacturing, for example, or the associate's degree that we know can confer some economic as well as social benefits to them. Then, of course, there is the four-year degree. And then, to get to that second point you raised, what about folks who are in the workforce, have been out of school for a long time? You know, what kinds of opportunities do we provide for them to continue to not only build their skills, but, as one person put it to me, to just feel my mind working again? So I think I want to paint a broad landscape of opportunity rather than just, you know, thinking in terms of, does someone go to college or not?
You have a chapter in the book, it's the second chapter in the book, called Who Should Go to College? And you make this point that for many of us, we grew up with basically your choices were this academic or college prep track or a general education track or a vocational track. So how have we changed and where are we now? and ultimately, and even to skip back a little bit and not to jam too much into this question, but how that philosophy ultimately hurt us.
Yeah. So this split between the academic and the vocational curriculum, and you know, a lot of your listeners who are old enough remember that high school used to be very, very kind of rigidly separated. You know, people went into a vocational track or an academic track or a large general track. That has been shifting and changing over the last 15, 20 years or so. People were, starting to rethink that. Now, students still do tend to, you know, move maybe in one direction or another, and that does correlate, unfortunately, with social class. You know, the more affluent kids head toward college, the less more toward the vocational. But we are really trying to rethink that and trying to break that rigid border between the two. And the second piece of your question is really important, and that is, how did we get here? Well, you know, about 100 years ago, we began to separate the high school into these rigid tracks of curriculum. And I think it's done us a lot of damage, because what it did to the academic side of things was it kind of drained away all the possibility of applying knowledge and thinking of creative ways to do things with what students were learning and giving them some kind of activity and connection to the world around them. I think the real damage was done to the vocational side of things, because what tended to happen was that all the intellectual components and dimensions of work got stripped away, so that often, not always, but often vocational education became a kind of minimal job training rather than getting students to think in, you know, to become problem solvers and think in terms of using the knowledge they were learning and troubleshooting and all of the kinds of intellectual work that we know goes on in occupations.
I was struck by something, and I don't remember exactly where it was in the book, but you were talking about this reform movement, the reform environment that we have now in K through 12, and that with so much being looked at on these tests and failure rates, that what can a backlash to this is that there's a feeling of helplessness. There's a feeling of, oh, okay, well, if these students aren't going to do well, then we're just sort of giving up. And while we've gotten away from that vocational track versus academic track, we still have it, just in a different form.
You know, and I think that what we have to be really careful about with the measurements and the metrics and the benchmarks that we use, this ended up being a big problem with No Child Left Behind that you're referring to, for example, that, you know, legislation that was well-intentioned in many ways, it was bipartisan, and the hope was that it was going to help reduce achievement gaps. But what we saw happen was it had all kinds of unfortunate secondary effects that were not good, everything from trying to game the system to just out-and-out cheating. My worry with the use of measures and metrics and all that as it moves into higher education is this. Absolutely, we have to have some kind of accountability, and absolutely, we're not doing anywhere near the job we need to be doing, especially with the kind of folks I'm concerned about, people who are not coming in with the best previous educational backgrounds. Absolutely. And so we need to hold institutions accountable. But we have to be very careful about the way we do that, because, again, as NCLB and other reform efforts have showed us, these can have secondary effects that are terrible. And I'll give you a couple very quick examples. Young man that I got to know very well had a terrible past, trouble on the streets, drug addiction. He came into an occupational program in welding. He really took to it. He did very well his first year. It's a two-year program. He did very well, got his life together, found out that he liked school and could do it. He decided, after a lot of deliberation, to join the Navy, because the service would enable him to have his education supported, he could relieve some of his debt, he would have a secure career pathway. He would be counted as a failure because he didn't finish that program. So do you see what I mean when I say that the metric we use, right, becomes very important? Just tallying that guy up as a failure, which is what would happen in many systems of accountability, would be a real disservice both to him and the college. So that's the kind of thing that concerns me.
Mike Rose is a professor at the UCLA Graduate School of Education and Information Studies. He's the author of many books, including the brand new Back to School, Why Everyone Deserves a Second Chance at Education, Succeeding in College Against the Odds. So you call for this in the book, and I'm just hoping that as we wrap up that you can put this in a little bit of a nutshell of what you feel we need to be doing and where your optimism lies, how that will ultimately help us succeed.
My optimism lies in all of these lives that people were nice enough to let me enter into. The book is driven by stories. And, you know, as you immerse yourself in people's lives who are having a hard time but come back to school, they struggle, they succeed, they learn things, they change who they are in many cases, we see that on a broad scale what we need to do is make sure we create the conditions for that to happen. Better instruction, more tutorial support, a better financial aid system, more ways to provide these folks with the support they need to succeed.
The name of the book, Back to School, Why Everyone Deserves a Second Chance at Education. It is published by The New Press. Mike Rowe, it's a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing with us this morning.
Thank you, Joe.
Again, the title of the book, Back to School, by Mike Rowe. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.